Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of ESPN. And it's just me this week. We'll get to that later on in the show. We took off last week here on Puck Soup. Oh, you're in Puck Soup. We took off last week on Puck Soup because of various and sundry reasons. We missed Seattle getting a team, which, you know, wasn't a surprise. It does suck that it seems like everybody outside of Seattle wants the Kraken, and inside Seattle they don't want the Kraken. They want it named after a fish or Metropolitans or whatever, which is great because, like, if they name it Metropolitans or they want to name it Metropolitans, that means they're going to have a real come to Jesus conversation with Gary Bettman about well, we have a division named Metropolitans. You can't name the team Metropolitans. What are you going to do? Name it the Central? Name it the Atlantic? What's next? So that'll be fun. We didn't get a chance to really talk about the playoff format debate, which I kind of helped stoke because I reported that the Board of Governors guys are all talking about trying to expand the playoffs. And that's obviously sort of an evergreen topic because it's probably not going to happen until they take the National Hockey League out of Gary Bettman's cold, dead hands. I don't mean like actual dead. I just mean like the end of his commissionership. We didn't even get a chance to talk really about Weezer being hired to play during the NHL Winter Classic, satisfying the NHL's target audience of, you know, 35 to 45 year old white males. I mean, at least until people like me realize that Weezer's probably not playing anything off of Pinkerton. Instead, it's just going to be that goddamn Toto cover. That's okay. If it means that I have a chance to interview Rivers Cuomo, this is only a good thing, I think, for the NHL. I do remember at the L.A. Stadium Series game. It wasn't a Winter Classic. It was a Stadium Series game. I do remember attempting to interview Paul Stanley about the – I believe it was the Olympics. I think it was ahead of the Olympics that year, and I was trying to ask him a USA versus Canada question and ask him about Canadian hockey inferiority. And he blew me off. I think it was one of those things where Kiss didn't want to alienate anybody, and so he didn't want to answer the question. But I got to talk to him, which was kind of cool. We are back in time, though, for this new classic moment from our good friend Pierre Maguire, in which he interviewed Jonathan Toews after Wednesday night's game between the Blackhawks and the Pittsburgh Penguins. And it was, you know, as awkward as one might imagine.
Go, your great captain, Jonathan Toews.
Thank you.
They still love you, Jonathan.
That's good.
It is. You know what? That was a...
They still love you, Jonathan. Toews is like, yeah, I kind of hope they do. Thanks for the validation there, big guy. So anyways, we were here for the Pierre Maguire awkwardness. So today on the show, we have an awesome guest. Paul Lucas is the founder of UniWatch, which you can read at uni-watch.com. So that's uni-watch.com. You could also find his writing on ESPN, where he does a bunch of uniform stuff there too. As you'll see, don't go calling it jersey watch or sweater watch or whatever. It is a uniform that this man writes about. He's an interesting cat. Long history online. Undoubtedly, you've read his stuff at some point in covering the quirky world of sports uniforms, especially when it comes to hockey stuff, especially when it comes to baseball stuff. A very enlightening conversation about his gig and also where the NHL is when it comes to uniforms and where it might be going, including a robust conversation about something I know a lot of you care about, which is advertising on uniforms. I still think that the jersey tuck rule was invented so they could put a sort of a bumper sticker ad on players' asses. That's just me, though. Before we get to Paul Lucas, want to mention that today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by no less than Lisa Mattresses. Now, this is the deal with Lisa Mattresses. I got one. It's a king size. Not going to lie. I somehow fit a king size mattress inside of a New York apartment. And let me tell you this. I am someone who sleeps quite well. My dear wife, Ruby, is someone who sleeps somewhat less than well at times. And having me, a human furnace, as far away from her in the bed as possible at sometimes, especially during the summer, quite beneficial. King-size bed, solid. Even more solid, the fact that the mattress is incredible. A quality night's sleep helps you recover from distractions faster, prevent burnout, make better decisions, improve your memory, yada, yada, yada. It's not marketing, it's science. To design a better mattress gives you a quality night's sleep, and Lisa leveraged 30 years of experience and hundreds of hours of scientific testing to develop the perfect mattress for all body shapes and sleeping styles. Their mission is to provide a better night's rest for everybody and everybody. Through their 110 program, they donate one mattress for every 10 they sell. That's more than 31,000 mattresses and counting, and they strive to leave the world a better place than where they found it. But that doesn't stop with mattress donations. Together with the Arbor Day Foundation, Lisa plants one tree for every mattress they sell. So if you're getting a mattress, not only are you helping yourself get some Z's, you're helping the world. I got it. For reals, though, this mattress is like the most comfortable thing I've ever been on. It's one of those deals where I can't be in the bed for more than maybe 10 seconds during the day as a work-from-home guy, or else I am drifting off to slumberland. Give yourself the gift of a better night's rest this holiday. Get $160 off a Lisa mattress at lisa.com/soup, LEESA.com/soup, and use the promo code soup at checkout. That's Lisa, LEESA.com/soup, promo code soup at checkout for a big old discount on a great old mattress. All right, here's Paul Lucas. Come back after the interview for some Puck Soup news. Paul Lucas of UniWatch. We are here in Brooklyn, which is very hip. I imagine when you walk around Brooklyn, you see many old jerseys that are no longer in circulation. For the hipsters have claimed them as themselves. Like Vancouver Grizzlies stuff would seem to be something that you'd find in Brooklyn.
Sometimes, occasionally. You know, in my neighborhood, I'm not in a very hip neighborhood here. I don't necessarily see anyone in any jerseys.
not a whole lot of defunct teams in the Afghani community
yeah,
in New York.
Yeah, but you know, for a long time I did live within spitting distance of the arena. Yeah. And so, yeah, I'd see people in various jerseys, especially on game day, mm-hmm. You know, for any sport. You know, it doesn't matter if there was a game going on at the arena. There's a lot of sports bars around there. And so, you know, if it was NFL Sunday or whatever, you'd see a lot of people in jerseys.
Now, you and I share a commonality in that we are both old on the internet. I remember when I was writing for Fan House on AOL back in like 2007, somewhere along those lines, linking out to UniWatch stuff. How long had UniWatch been around?
Well, it depends on what you mean by UniWatch. UniWatch as a column began in 1999. And not on the internet. It was a printed column that ran every 4 weeks in the Village Voice.
I had no idea that was the origin. So you were like a Village Voice columnist writing about sports stuff.
Yeah, in the weird Village Voice sports section, which, you know, was buried in the back of the paper with the sex ads.
Were there other people of any renown that wrote sports for the Village Voice? Because I wasn't living here at the time.
Emma Spann, who's now like the baseball editor at Sports Illustrated.
Oh, yeah.
She started in the Voice sports section, and a few other people. At the time, well, I'm sure you know Mike Beaver. Mm-hmm. So he had a column there called Mixing It Up, which mm-hmm. was about hockey fights, which, you know, now in the age of blogs and everything, a blog about hockey fights is a dime a dozen.
Right.
But back then in the 90s or the late 90s, that was sort of an adventurous kind of out there kind of sports journalism to be doing, or sports media. And so I had come up with this idea to write about uniforms. I spent a lot of the 90s writing about various kinds of non-sports design, like package design, brand design, industrial design, blah, 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 and realized that I could take that filter and that approach and apply it to sports. But it was a tough sell because nobody had ever really done that before.
Yeah.
So I shopped it around. I did approach ESPN, actually, and you know, I eventually ended up at ESPN. But when I first approached them in early 1999, they said no. The Sports Illustrated said no. A lot of places said no. And so I set my sights a little lower, and I thought, Well, the Village Voice has this sports section where they've got a guy writing about hockey fights. So, like, if they can do that, like, you know, whatever editor can wrap his head around that can probably get what I'm proposing here. And they did. And that's how UniWatch started.
What I find fascinating about that is because it doesn't surprise me that you shopped it around without people biting, because in that time, the entire notion of fan culture being something that's viable journalistically, or even from a business perspective, I think hadn't really caught on yet. You know, the idea that, you know, when you would watch a commercial, it would be ex-athletes. It wouldn't be people in face paint at the bar.
Right.
And I feel like there was a sort of a change made, probably through the growth of the internet and that kind of thing. But, like, at the time, it was not a thing where people were like, it was like, oh, of course, write about the stuff people buy.
Right. Although I wasn't right. You know, I still don't write about the stuff people buy. I write about what the players wear. I tend not to write about merchandise.
Well, I mean, but essentially, like, what the players wear is an advertisement for someone to buy it in many cases.
Yeah, but that part actually doesn't matter to me.
Well, no, it doesn't matter to you. But that's why it would matter to an editor. As an editor, they're going to look at it as a business story.
Well, that's not actually how The Voice looked at it, and it's not how I've ever pursued it. I honestly don't care what the fans wear. I care what the players wear.
Right.
That's always been more interesting to me. Like, why is this guy's sleeve longer than that guy's sleeve? What does that baseball player have written underneath the brim of his cap? I can see he's got something there, and if I, you know, what is it? I can't see what it is. That is always what's interesting to me, that the uniform is, because that's what we root for as fans. I mean, that's why the fans buy them. And, you know, the famous Jerry Seinfeld line about rooting for laundry is true, that we root for that uniform no matter who's wearing it. And it can be a player who we hated yesterday, and then he's traded to our team and suddenly we love him. Why? Because he's wearing our uniform.
Yeah.
And so that's how UniWatch got started. I eventually ended up at ESPN in 2004.
Loved Page Two.
At Page Two, right? When Hunter Thompson was still
Hunter Thompson,
Page Two.
DJ Gallo, bought the sports pickle there.
Yep.
There's a lot of people of a certain age in this audience right now that are applauding the podcast for bringing up Page. Page Two was the best.
Page Two was awesome.
There's a lot of people that don't remember Page Two at all, but Page Two really was sort of like, if you took the smartness of Grantland, but then put it through sort of an absurd filter of listicles and cool stuff and culturey stuff, it was just everything there was so cool and addictive.
Yeah.
It was the kind of thing when I was an editor at the newspaper, people would give me resumes and they would be like, who are your influences? And they would be like, Bill Simmons. And I'm like, okay. But if someone asked me who my influences were coming up, it probably would have been Page Two. I mean, just that vibe and that sort of approach to sports, the pop culture mixed with sports stuff would have definitely been it. So that was your stuff on there was
it was a good
great.
Fit.
Yeah, it was a great fit.
It was a really good fit. And I was lucky because UniWatch had already been in two venues by then. It started in The Voice, and then The Voice got rid of their sports section. So I was sort of orphaned, and I decided I wasn't done yet with UniWatch. And so I shopped it around again and ended up at Slate. In their sports section, which at the time was sort of like the North Dakota of sports sections. But the important thing, and this is what you mentioned when we are like old internet, Slate taught me how UniWatch worked on the internet, because up until that time, The Voice was basically copying and pasting my text that ran in the printed paper and putting it on their website. But I wasn't building in links or, you know, I wasn't writing it for the internet. I was writing it for print, and they were just duping it. On the internet. But Slate was a web-only publication, and still is, of course. And I had never, I mean, I'd had a career as a freelance writer, but I'd never written for a web-only publication before. And so suddenly I realized, oh, you can play around with hyperlinks. And I realized that UniWatch was particularly well-suited to that, because I was often talking about small details.
Right.
And I could show, that, you know, in print, like how many photos can you run with the article. But on the web, you can link to as many photos as you need, and there are no space constraints and so on. And so what does every editor always tell a writer? You know, don't just tell me, show me. And with the web, you could do that. And with UniWatch, I could suddenly show in a way I wasn't able to do before. And so I was there for, like, not quite a year. And then I was itchy to do something bigger than Slate. And I knew some of my readers were ESPN people, you know, people who were writing to me. And I said, you know, can you get me an interview with somebody? Can you, you know, I want to, like, I belong over there. I belong on Page Two. Come on, let's make, like, UniWatch belongs on Page Two. and they could have said, you know, I mean, it's actually very similar to what happened to you, right? They could have said, well, Puck Daddy is already, you know,
yeah.
that's, we want fresh squeezed product,
right.
or
yeah,
fresh
yeah.
squeezed brand or something yeah. like that. But fortunately for me, and I guess similarly for you, they were willing to import something.
Yeah.
And so UniWatch went to ESPN. And then it wasn't a daily blog, which I think is – a lot of people think that the daily blog got picked up by ESPN, but the daily UniWatch blog was actually a spinoff of my column.
Right.
That came around in 2006 mm-hmm. for people who basically – can't wait like a whole week or 10 right. days or whatever it is in between.
One of the things about your writing that I always remembered was it would be, I mean, when you say you dove into internet writing, you dove in. You'd have these incredibly long and detailed paragraphs and every five words would be a link to something.
Yeah,
and,
I overlinked.
But you didn't overlink, but the thing that you did that was great is that sometimes the links would not, I mean, oftentimes the links would lead you to interesting places.
Mm-hmm.
They would lead you to places where it's a small writer or a small blog or a fan who has noticed this thing and brought it to your attention, and you link back out to them. And, you know, we did that on Puck Daddy a lot with the Puck headlines, is we would link out to people that maybe you haven't read and try to bring attention to it. And I think, like, your column was definitely a trailblazer in that sense of kind of spreading the wealth a little bit. because there was a time in sports journalism when you were given a tip, you hoover that tip up and then regurgitate it as if it is your own. But you were always very good about giving credit to the people that were giving you these observations.
Well, it was interesting. What I found was that the more information I put out there, the more I got back from the readership.
Right.
People wanted to share, like the people who, I always said, not everybody gets UniWatch, but not everyone's into it, but
yeah.
the people who are into it are really into it. And so they want to share. And a lot of times they don't really know anybody else, you know, no one else in their social circle, or, you know, their wife makes fun of them or whatever it is. Like, not everybody is into uniforms. And so if you are into it and you found a community, even a virtual community mm-hmm. that gets it, you want to share the wealth and say, like, hey, like, look what I, you know, here's, you know, they, and they, I became unwittingly sort of a hub mm-hmm. for all this stuff. And yeah, I don't want to take credit for something that isn't mine. And so I've always given credit
yeah.
For something that comes in. And you know, when I started at The Voice, the editor who took the pitch that I gave him, he said, you know, every 4 weeks, like, are you sure there's, I mean, I like the idea, but are you sure there's enough to do? Like, can you do this every 4 weeks?
Yeah.
I said, I think so. And then at Slate, we did it every 2 weeks. And they said, we can't wait. You know, the internet moves faster. We can't do every four, you know, can you do it every 2 weeks? Because we'd love that. But are you sure there's enough?
Yeah.
And I'd say, I think so. And, you know, eventually I did the daily blog, and I was asking myself, like, can I actually do this every day? Is there enough content, enough material? And, like, let's find out. And it turns out the more I put out there, the more comes back.
Right,
and while,
back, yeah.
while you and I are sitting here, my readers are emailing me, they're tweeting stuff at me, all the things they've seen and found and discovered,
yeah.
and or just, you know, rants they have. And so, yeah, it's a big universe out there, as I like to say.
Yeah, better than Watch Galaxy, I believe, you know, in theory. So let's talk about your process, because as you said, you are, I mean, there are times when you play detective.
Mm-hmm.
You see something that's interesting and a little bit off. I'm gonna make a guess here that baseball might be the most plentiful as far as weird variations on gear. Yeah,
baseball is really the best documented sport.
Yeah.
It has done the best job of documenting its own history,
mm-hmm.
And so that includes uniform history.
Right.
And it helps that the chief curator at the Baseball Hall of Fame, a guy named Tom Schieber, happens to be a big uniform guy, so he's very into uniform documentation. And so, yeah, baseball in general is the easiest sport to research. Basketball is the worst. Hockey's sort of in between.
Somebody sends you a tip. You're like, that's odd. Do you start playing detective? Do you reach out to teams and stuff? Or how does it
sure.
work?
Sure. I mean, it depends on, you know, whether is this a historical thing? Is this something that's happening right now? You know, is it somebody was just watching a game and they saw something weird going on? or did they find an old photo of something from, you know, the 1940s? So, yeah, I'll reach out to teams. I'll reach out to other, depending on the sport, I have sort of go-to guys who are often like serious researchers or historians or whatever, you know, like really, really serious guys who like spend hours poring over microfilm and that kind of thing,
yeah.
which I have done occasionally, but I don't spend my whole life doing it.
it's like writing a term paper.
Yeah. I mean, for some people, this kind of thing is like serious business. I mean, for me, it's serious business, but
right.
you know, different people have different specialties, like mm-hmm. football helmets. I've got like a helmet guy who is a serious helmet historian. Like, he knows everything. And when I say helmets, I'm including face masks, chin straps, interior pads, you know, like all of that.
Yeah.
He knows every detail. and, you know, from player to player, manufacturer to manufacturer. And so for, like, I've got these go-to guys. I'll also, you know, in the age of social media, I can put something out there and say, like on Twitter or whatever, and say, hey, does anyone know about this? You know, I've got, does anyone know more? On my blog, on my daily blog, I can put something out there and say, I've got a tip on this. And, you know, it's always, I'm sure you've been in the situation where you want to put out a query, but you don't want to give away the whole store.
It is the toughest that people don't understand that in writing, that's the toughest thing.
You don't want to tip your hand too much.
Right. And in fact, like, now it's gotten to a point where I'm very careful about where I put it out. I know that a lot of journalists follow me on Twitter, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, I've been reporting on this hockey in Alabama story, which isn't necessarily, you know, who killed Kennedy, but it is something that I thought was an interesting angle, and I didn't want to put it on Twitter and ask, because I was going to ask these Nashville fans about their sort of habits. They live in Alabama. Where you go? What do? What do you watch? How is your fandom in Alabama? You know, because the last thing I want is the Athletic to write the Alabama story before I get a chance to. Mm-hmm. So I went to Reddit, and I went to the Nashville Predators Reddit. And put the question there because I'm like,
oh, so that was you went to the deep state.
Basically. I went to the deep state because I knew. Right, I went to the dark web basically because I knew that the people that the quote unquote competition, who may not even care about this angle anyway, but just in case, aren't going to read it there. Mm-hmm. But I knew that if I put the query there, they'll email me. I've got my information, and maybe this thing that I'm working on stays on the down low.
Right.
So you have to do the same thing. You have to kind of put it out there and say, does anyone know about this thing? Or,
I mean, I have a slight advantage to the extent that not as many people are going to want to write about my, you know,
right.
Not as many people are on my beat as are on your beat.
Right, yeah, yeah.
But I do have competition. And so, yeah, we're always trying to scoop each other, but we also help each other. And like, we'll sometimes, you know, if I have a rumor that's unconfirmed or mm-hmm. whatever, sometimes I'll talk to one of my frenemies or competitors. And we compare information sometimes, like, you know, what have you heard about this? Or, you know, but again, you don't want to tip your hand. And we all respect each other. You don't, like, walk all over somebody and steal their scoop or anything like
that.
Let's
pause on that because I was going to ask you about that. It has become a cottage industry, the reporting on jerseys that haven't been released yet and changes to gear that haven't been released yet. I've been fascinated by this. And there are sites, I mean, for the NHL, I mean, you know, there's a Aesthetics is the site that does a lot of the work there. You know, they're a place that they do that. I'm sort of fascinated by that aspect of the gig. And I imagine you having done this as long as you have, you've seen that grow. That hunger for information about what the next Ducks third jersey is going to look like.
Definitely. And that part of it is that these things are often, you know, the teams try to keep things shrouded in secrecy and they try to have like a big drum roll leading up to the unveiling. And then things inevitably leak. And there's, you know, usually through some kind of retail thing, right? Like some guy at Dick's Sporting Goods puts a jersey out in the racks a couple of days or sometimes a couple of weeks before he should. And someone takes a photo.
Do you have a favorite leak?
A favorite leak.
is there one that just came out of nowhere and you broke it and you're just like...
You know, there was one. I was in baseball one year. I'm trying to remember what year it was. Probably around 2012. In the winter of 2012, I got... Somebody leaked the Major League Baseball batting practice caps, which is, I mean, in the grand scheme of uniform elements, like that's pretty low down, you know, batting, you know, it's not even an official game cap, but you know, it's part of the uniform package that teams have. And somebody leaked the whole new set, you know, for the upcoming season. And it included the Atlanta Braves having a new design that included their old whooping Indian.
Whoa.
Indian head logo.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not too down with that. And and I wrote about it and said, I'm not too down with that. And a lot of other people apparently weren't either. And I was frankly surprised by how negative the reaction was.
Yeah.
I mean, not to my piece, but to the cap.
Right.
And then the Braves changed the design. And they said, you know, well, that was just like one option among many we were considering.
Of course.
And that was crap. That was what they were planning to do. And the reaction was so negative, they changed their mind. I wasn't looking to get, you know, I'm glad they didn't use that cap, but I didn't go out there with the aim of making them, you know, change their design. But it shows the impact that a leak can have.
Yeah, that's the new, my Twitter account was hacked. It's teams being like, this thing that got leaked that you absolutely hate, it's just one of many designs that we're considering.
Yeah.
That happened with the I think it was the Either the Islanders or the Lightning had a jersey leak this season, and that was the response. It was just like, oh, no, this is just, I mean, it could be anything at the end of the day. And of course, it ended up being the thing that linked.
And, you know, anyway, people are intrigued by leaks, I think, just because there's a sense of intrigue around leaks, right? The whole idea of a leak, you know, makes you think about, you know, like Watergate and Deep Throat or something like that. So I've got my various deep uni kind of people. And in fact, actually, we can talk about hockey. Somebody just leaked something to me, I think it was last week. And I know you want to talk at some point in this discussion about, you know, the Adidas.
No, of course.
and I think one of the real, in general, I think the Adidas uniforms look mostly okay. But I think the biggest problem across the board is the collar designs. Yeah. I think most of them look awful.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was, I mean, I'm stammering here, but we had a lot of the same problem in the NFL when Nike took over for them in 2012 with what they call their flywire collars. And it's a branding thing where the company says, we just want to make sure you know that we made this and we can't really change the team's design, but we can give it put our distinct spin on this one jersey element, the collar. And I've got this source in Chicago and I've been calling him Deep Dish because... Because it's Chicago, right? Like deep dish pizza.
Of course.
And he told me he's connected to the United Center, and he said they sold out of Blackhawks large replica red replica jerseys, which he said is their single biggest selling item there, and they didn't restock them. Because he said that he was told it's because some adjustment is coming to the collar next season.
Oh.
And... Now, I don't know if I haven't been able to confirm that, but everything else he's told me has checked out. I mean, he's a good source. And I also don't know if that's just a Blackhawks thing or if that's an NHL-wide thing. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping it's the latter because I think most of the collars are not good. And so it would be nice if that was something that where they've heard that feedback, because I know a lot of fans don't like the collars either.
What's your looking at down at the earth perspective of the hockey jersey as a piece of sports gear?
Today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by SeatGeek. You know, getting tickets online can be far too complicated. With hundreds of sites and varying degrees of reliability, it's hard to know who to trust. Hubba, 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 money, 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 who do you trust? That's why SeatGeek is the way to go. It pulls in millions of tickets into one place. You can easily find the seats you want for a price you're willing to pay. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to source for everything from sports to concerts to comedy to theater. Theater. That's actually where I probably use the most, to be honest with you, here in, you know, Broadway land, trying to land some tickets. Usually when Ruby and I are going to go see a show, it's on a whim. We're not really all that much for planning. So we've been using SeatGeek a lot to grab some seats. Just saw The Lifespan of a Fact with Daniel Radcliffe. The other day, and it was a solid show and good tickets, courtesy of our friends at SeatGeek. You should make it your go-to ticket source for everything, because honestly, it's the best and easiest way that I've found to shop for tickets using their app. Best of all, listeners to Puck Soup get $10 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app today. Another promo code SOUP, S-O-U-P, that spells soup. That's promo code SOUP for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. They have the tickets. Now back to Paul. I
walked into your house. It's a lovely place. Unfortunately, saw a Rangers jersey. I'm going to assume that's some sort of parental thing. But I mean, the hockey jersey itself, your thoughts on that as a gear aficionado?
Well, it's obviously there's a lot of mystique around the hockey sweater, right? The NHL loves to sort of promote the mythology of the hockey sweater. Mm-hmm. And that's part of it, is that you don't call it a jersey, you call it a sweater, right?
Yeah.
I'm more interested in general about the overall hockey uniform.
Mm-hmm. The pads and the helmet
and the socks and the pants. Yeah. And in general, I resist when people say, like, are you a jersey guy? And I say, no, I'm a uniform guy. Like, the whole package. And that, again, is part of, I think, part of the problem of fan, like, focusing on what fans wear, because fans only buy the jersey,
right?
So there's a tendency to really restrict your view of the universe to only to jerseys. But it's the whole package, and the hockey uniform is really interesting because, first, it's the only sport of the major sports with an untucked jersey.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got more real estate to work with in terms of your design.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have those belly stripes or torso stripes or whatever you call them. You've got the short pants, unless you're the Flyers or the Whalers wearing Cooperalls.
Yeah.
You know? But you got short pants, which is kind of bizarre. Like, I am frankly astounded that they have kept that format. I love the look of it. Like, I love the look of a hockey uniform. But it is unusual and sort of counterintuitive. You'd think they would have come up with something more streamlined by now, like Cooperalls or something of that ilk.
Right.
You've got the long socks. You don't have to have a number on the front, which is different than basketball and football, where it's required. So that's why you can have all these great crests and beautiful designs that you can't have in some other sports. You've got more body coverage than in any other sport. Really, the only part of the only skin that's uncovered is the face. And, you know, you compare that to the other sports where, you know, arms or legs or whatever, you know, depending on what sport we're talking about. So you've got, as a designer, as a uniform designer, you've got the most real estate to play with. You've got the biggest canvas to work with. And that makes, and you've got these different elements like the short pants where you can introduce contrast, you know, between the jersey and the pants and the socks. And so I think a hockey uniform, you know, if I were a designer instead of a writer, hockey is the sport I'd want to be designing for because it just offers the most possibilities. And I think it's the most interesting looking sport from a uniform standpoint.
If you were to be a designer, like what do you think the elements are in a successful uniform for a hockey team?
Well, it starts with the crest, obviously. Yeah. Just like, in football, people ask me sometimes, for all these sports, football starts with the helmet. With hockey, it starts with the crest. And in general, you know, I do like the rain. You took that little pot shot a few minutes ago about the Rangers. I put that jersey out there for you. It's the only hockey jersey I have in the house right now, aside from the one I'm wearing.
Oh, that's great. It's like when my parents came over to my apartment and I put out the manger around Christmas time, so they think I'm still a Catholic. No.
But I do like the Rangers, you know, the diagonal lettering down the chest. I grew up with that. I grew up in a Rangers household. Even though I grew up on Long Island, I was already a Rangers fan like a year before the Islanders existed. I fell asleep to listening to Marv Albert call Rangers games on the radio in the early 70s.
And the Rangers jersey, but I don't think I've actually ever talked about this on the show, but like the Rangers jersey to me, even though I have so much love for the Liberty Head third jersey that they wore in the late 90s, I think that's one of the best jerseys the NHL has ever put out. We may never see it again. I don't know why we haven't seen it since.
The white one you're talking about, the white Liberty Head.
Or the dark blue one with the Liberty Head on. Yeah, okay. I mean, they're all good. But the Rangers primary jersey, the classic one with the horizontal with the diagonal lettering, I always kind of liked it because it was so Manhattan. It was so like, you know, other teams have a little picture, you know, or a couple of little letters in the middle. Our logo starts up here on the shoulder. It goes all the way down the freaking front of the jersey, so you know exactly who we are. Like, there's something beautiful about that.
I like your interpretation. But in general, although I do like that, you know, to follow the thought, finish up on the thought. Well, I do like the Rangers jersey, and I always have, I guess in part because I did grow up with it.
Yeah.
In general, I don't think lettering works on a hockey jersey. It doesn't belong on a hockey jersey. You should have, as you say, a little picture or whatever, you know. And the teams that have tried to do lettering other than the Rangers, I don't think it's worked out too well, right? Like Colorado, right?
Heavy, they had that Colorado.
Or the Stars, you know, it's not good.
Right.
The teams that have tried to have a word mark rather than, you know, a big logo, big, beautiful embroidered logo. And as I mentioned before, you can't do that in most of the other sports. And you can in hockey. So why wouldn't you?
Right.
You know, like put something, you know, blow it out with five or six colors.
Oh, yeah.
You know, have some, you know, really beautiful, iconic crest. And, you know, that's why when I was a kid, I didn't even really understand what the Canadiens logo.
Right.
I understood the C, but I didn't understand what the H in the middle was for. And I just knew that it felt like hockey,
right?
You know, and like why would you change anything like that?
If
you had like a great logo, don't put lettering or even though I guess the Canadians, it is a letter, but you know what I mean. Don't put words. Don't put a full word on your jersey. Have a gorgeous crest.
You know, one of the best come to Jesus moments in sports as a fan is when you realize that the logo is something that you didn't realize it was. Like the first time you see the Brewers logo for what it is, or the first time you see the Whalers logo with the negative space.
I still get emails, I would say a handful a year, about the Whalers logo.
Yeah.
I mean, however many decades it's been right now. And we were saying, you know, I've been looking at that logo for years now, and I just now saw the H and the negative space. I didn't even know it was there.
It's incredible.
It really is. You know, it's like a Rorschach blot or something.
Yeah.
And then, like, suddenly you see the thing that wasn't there.
Yeah. Whalers logo, I'm guessing, is high on your list of all-timers?
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And I'm lucky enough to have interviewed the guy who designed it. And
oh, wow.
You know, it's interesting. That's one of the ones where you know, it's not obviously not in circulation anymore, mm-hmm. but it's still, everyone still loves it and it feels current. It's always in the conversation, I feel mm-hmm. like. I guess because there's that vocal contingent in Hartford that, you know, they keep dreaming that their yeah. team is going to come yeah. back there. But like, I always love the North Stars logo too. Mm-hmm. And this, I just like the sort of, I guess, the optimism of the arrow pointing up and, yeah. you know, and I'm a big green and gold guy. Those are yeah. my favorite colors. Those are Uniwatch's colors on my blog. And so I always like the North Stars. Nobody really talks about that one. And I think part of it is that, you know, they got another team in Minnesota. And so they, mm-hmm. you know, they... Well, you don't have that same vocal contingent.
I think the last time people really talked about it was actually Mike Modano's last year with the Dallas Stars when they had that game up in Minnesota. And I think he just took the opening skate wearing a North Stars jersey. Mm-hmm. And it was this wonderful moment of tying those two franchises together.
Yeah, it was like an alumni game.
Yeah,
did, right?
But it goes back to what you were talking about at the beginning of the conversation about, you know, guys change uniforms and, you know, you're rooting for the laundry. Mike Modano showed up in a Detroit Red Wings jersey the next year, and everyone's like, this is not right. Like, there are those moments in sports, too, when it comes to uniforms of, you know, when someone becomes so synonymous with one, when one sees one in another uniform, it just doesn't feel like, if there was Tony Gwynn in a Reds uniform, mm-hmm. they just know.
That's a classic thing, like a comment thread or a discussion board thread talking about uniforms of players in the quote-unquote wrong uniform.
Right.
You know, like Dave Winfield at the end of his career in a Twins uniform yeah. or an Indians uniform mm-hmm. or whatever it might be.
One of the many Reindeer games I play is, you know, if you close your eyes and I say a name, what's the first, what jersey do you see them in? Huh. You know, and it becomes...
What uniform, Greg? What uniform?
What uniform? And it becomes amazing because there are certain people that are just like, you know, if they... You know, Chris Pronger is a good example. Like, Chris Pronger, a lot of people are like, the Blues. And then there's someone like, no, we won a cup with the Ducks. And then they're like, but I remember him for that year in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. It's incredible the way that you sort of, somebody is cemented in your mind wearing a certain uniform, mm-hmm. and then that's it. That's the ideal version of that person.
I remember being in high school, and Dave Winfield was going to be a free agent, and... I'm sorry to bring it back to baseball.
No, baseball's fine. But I mean, I'm a Mets fan, so I'm kind of a lapsed baseball fan a little bit. And I swear to God, if Syndergaard goes to the Yankees.
Yeah. And Pete Rose was a free agent maybe that same winter or something. So it was in that period.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember thinking, like, what if the Mets signed them? Which, of course, the odds of that right. happening. But I was just trying to imagine Pete Rose in a Mets uniform. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't wrap my head around it. Like, it didn't compute. And
yeah.
And that was like 1980 or whatever it was. And so in those days, free agency was still new and player movement wasn't the same as it is now. And I think, so that's something I think maybe today's fans can, it's not such a stretch to imagine a player in right. different uniforms because players move more. And also you have Photoshop. You don't have to imagine what it's going to look like. You can make it happen.
I think that's exactly what happened with John Tavares. When Tavares left the Islanders and went to the Maple Leafs, mm-hmm. showed up in the Maple Leaf uniform, you know, normally the reaction is going to be, oh, that's not right. He should be an Islander. And yet we're looking at it, we're like, you know what? I've seen every publication on the internet put that guy in a Maple Leaf uniform at some point in the last 2 years because he was going to be a free agent. Mm-hmm. And they're like, where is he going to end up? It kind of looks normal. There's nothing.
Because, first it was a thing where, like, after the trade, like 5 minutes after the trade, ESPN would have, or whoever, would have the Photoshop version.
Yeah, yeah.
And now they don't even wait for the trade. It's yeah. they use these renderings for the, you know, where will he end up yeah. articles. Yeah. And you know, you don't have to imagine what it's going to look like. You can see what it's going to look like. There's a guy at the NFL who actually has done these amazing time-lapse videos showing how he photoshops like a photo of whatever player right after he's been traded. He gets the call like so-and-so has been traded to the Cleveland Browns or whatever.
Right.
And he has to go through all this bit to Photoshop a photo and take him out of a Detroit Lions uniform
right.
into a Cleveland Browns uniform or whatever.
And get it on the website.
And get it on a website.
Yeah.
And it takes him like usually a couple of hours, but he has started doing these time-lapse things. And so you can see it happen in like the course of maybe 2 minutes, what takes him a couple
That's
of hours.
So crazy.
And it's amazing. But, and he gets huge traffic
yeah.
From his tweets of this. And that shows even the interest in not just in what the player looks like in another uniform,
yeah.
but how you would make him look like a player in another uniform.
We mentioned the Islanders. We should probably talk about the one of the most infamous uniforms of all time, the Fish Sticks uniform. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There's that new book out now, of course.
There is. Yeah. I want to talk to that dude. The colors were Aquafresh toothpaste. The logo was Gorton's Fish Sticks. What did you think about that kit as far as what it was?
Not a big fan. I mean, the whole, I called it the seasick uniform, you know, because it had the wavy stripes. It had the wavy nameplate on
it. Yeah,
it
did. Yeah.
I mean, they had the courage of their convictions. I'll give them that. You mm-hmm. know, like they had it. to me, the big problem wasn't the fisherman on the front. That wasn't great either. Mm-hmm. But the whole wavy business, like, it was, I mean,
the wave. I remember that Ziggy Palfy was one that mm-hmm. I always remembered. Mm-hmm. Like, Palfy's name was short, and yet it had like this wave to it on the back crest. I'm like, why? Why would you do that to the nameplate? It made no sense.
It made no sense. Yeah. And I mean, now it's one of the things that you can look back at and kind of laugh at. Yeah. And it's sort of like, I'm glad I live in a world where that big a mistake can still happen.
Yeah.
You know,
right? Yeah.
Sort of like those futuristic Major League Baseball uniforms from 1899. You know, yeah. These are things that now we can look back at and say, oh, it's so bad, it's good, mm-hmm. or whatever. And it's sort of interesting that such a huge mistake could happen.
To me, the fish sticks one is always often talked about as being one of the worst third jerseys of all time. There's obviously other ones. The Kings had that one that looked like
the Burger King one.
The Blues had the one that didn't even put out there because Mike Keenan killed it,
right,
with the horn and the whole thing.
That story, actually, that's been disputed.
There's a certain
apocryphal story about Keenan. I mean, the jersey is real,
right,
but Keenan
saying, "I'm not going to let you're not fucking wearing those," or whatever he said.
Yeah, that's. I've read a fair amount of documentation that cast doubt on that.
But Paul, don't you want to believe it? The one though that I think is by far the biggest misstep, misfire of all time, even beyond the fish sticks one, is the Buffalo Slug jersey with the Buffalo Sabres.
Right. That was definitely a bad one.
I mean, to me, first of all, they fucked around with that uniform way too much. I mean, the base uniform of what you know, McGillney and LaFontaine and those guys wore is perfect, and they've mm-hmm. gone back to it because they recognize it's perfect.
Well, I don't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
But that's what happens in all these cases, man. Like, look what the Islanders are doing now. They're back to basically what they started with.
Right.
And what do the Sabres do? They're back to what they started with, because everybody understands at heart those things weren't broke. Mm-hmm. You didn't need to fix them. And it's kind of sad to say, as someone covering this beat, there are not many uniform changes that are upgrades. There really aren't. And a lot of these teams, when they were designing, basically where the foremost question was, what looks good on the ice mm-hmm. or on the field or on the court or whatever, as opposed to what's going to sell to 18 to 34 year olds,
right,
which is the foremost question today. Like, when they were just designing for like what looks good for this team, they did a better job at it. And most of those designs stand the test of time and don't look dated and like hold up a lot better than a lot of what we see nowadays. And that's why a lot of these teams have gone back to them.
So you think that when a team makes a bad uniform decision now, mm-hmm. it's because they're pitching it to the marketplace,
I think,
rather than the aesthetics of the team?
I think when a team makes almost any decision, a uniform decision now, it's because they're pitching it to the retail marketplace.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes, you know, they stumble into something good. Or, I mean, what I'm saying is that designing for retail is not antithetical with coming up with good design. Sometimes you do.
Right.
But I think in general, you get a tail wagging the dog effect.
How do you feel about the job Adidas has done with the hockey stuff?
Overall, I think it's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, because overall, they didn't change that much, really. Right? Like, that, whenever these league-wide makeovers happen, you know, when the NHL goes from Reebok to Adidas, or the NFL goes from Reebok to Nike, or the NBA went from Adidas to Nike, and everybody thinks everything's going to change, in part because there's a misconception that people think that the company imposes the design, mm-hmm. like that Nike is going to redesign the NFL, or there's talk that Nike is going to take over Major League Baseball's uniform contract in 2020. And just today on Twitter, somebody said, what do you think Nike's going to do to Major League Baseball? And Nike can't do anything to Major League Baseball, just like Adidas couldn't do anything to the NHL. Like, these companies are vendors providing a service to a client. The client is the league and its teams, and they have the final say. The client always has the final say.
Right.
Now, Adidas can make suggestions and say, here's what we'd like to do, and we have some ideas, and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if a team, like, look at a team like the Devils, which has been so determined, really, to just stay with their look.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can decide for yourself if you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, but they're the ones who are calling the shots, or the Red Wings, or whoever.
Yeah.
And in general, Adidas, I mean, what do? They came up with a new template.
Yeah.
Right. And
everybody was worried it was going to be like three stripes on everything.
Right.
You know, and if it's not,
No, yeah. I mean, practice gear, but who cares? It's practice gear. And in general, it still looks like the NHL, just like the NFL still looked like the NFL when Nike took over. And the main thing, like the main little stamp they put on things, aside from their logo on the back, are these collars.
Yeah.
That just look
terrible. They look terrible. Yeah, exactly. I agree. One of the things I think hockey fans are certainly cognizant of when it comes to uniforms is what's happened in other sports with advertising. Now, typically the NHL is a league that certainly takes its its lead from the NBA in many ways. Mm-hmm. Now that the NBA has ads on jerseys, I think there's a feeling that it's only a matter of time for the NHL to get there. How do you feel about ads on jerseys overall, and how do you feel about it maybe coming to the NHL at some point?
Overall, I'm completely opposed to it. That whole rooting for laundry thing, mm-hmm. That is an unusually passionate and tight form of brand loyalty, that we root for this brand regardless of its quality, mm-hmm. or the content that it has, or the quality of that content. The team can be good one year, bad another year, and you still keep rooting for it. That tight bond between fan and team should not be sullied by the presence of another brand. Mm-hmm. Like, it should not be watered down. I'm totally opposed to it.
Sidebar, mm-hmm. How do you feel about European soccer then, where the ad is the jersey?
I've never been a big soccer fan. I didn't grow up with it. And
yeah.
One thing that's kept me from taking it more seriously as an adult is that, the ad is the jersey.
Because you're rooting for Emirates.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. One thing that's nice is that the World Cup doesn't have any of that, right?
That's true.
No ads in the World Cup.
And your feelings on hockey, dabbling in these dark arts?
I'm not so sure it's going to happen, at least not anytime soon. I've been on conference calls, you probably have too, the same calls, where I've heard Gary Bettman say that he doesn't want to do it. And usually, you can say he's just talking out of his ass, or, he's not being straight with people. But the way these things usually work, and you can look at the NBA, is that they try to float a lot of trial balloons about this, and they try to soften the fans up and get used to the idea that it's inevitable. Adam Silver, who is the commissioner of the NBA, was talking about putting ads on jerseys even before he was the commissioner. It was when he was the number two guy, and he was David Stern's right-hand man. And he was saying, this is something we want to investigate, and blah, blah, blah. I started calling him Adam It's Inevitable Silver, because he was saying it over and over, that it's inevitable we're going to have ads. And what he really wanted was for that to become a self-fulfilling prophecy,
right?
That if enough people accept
that it's going
to
happen,
then when you actually do it, they was like, well, it was bound to happen. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
And I haven't heard, maybe you have, but I haven't heard anything like that from the NHL. And I think that usually they would try to soften up the fan base and get them used to the idea. Mm-hmm. And like I said, float these trial balloons, do it in an all-star game, which the NBA also did.
Yeah.
And things like that to sort of ease into it. And I haven't seen anything like that in the NHL. Yeah. And when I heard Gary Bettman say that, you can read the quote, but what I heard in his voice is that he really does believe in that mythology of the NHL sweater.
I think he might have even used the word sanctity at one point.
Yeah. I don't think he wants to do it. To me, it's interesting. The NHL is actually, you say they take their lead from the NBA, but they've actually soft-pedaled a lot of things that other leagues are doing. Like the Adidas logo and the Reebok logo before it, mm-hmm. is not on the front of the jersey.
No.
It's on the back, or even on the sleeve. It's on the back of the jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Other sports have things like camouflage and pink for breast cancer and all that. Hockey only does, or the NHL at least, only does that during warm-ups.
Right.
Right? There's never been an NHL team wear camouflage, military appreciation, whatever.
During games.
Uniform during a game.
Yeah.
Which I find, frankly, surprising.
Yeah.
I prefer it that they don't do it during a game, but I'm pleasantly surprised, we could say.
Yeah.
They restrict this to just pregame. And what's your feeling about it? Why don't they do that? All the other sports do it.
I don't know, because I agree with you, because you corrected yourself to when you said hockey to say the NHL, and that's the truth, because obviously in the minor leagues,
yes.
They wear a different jersey every night,
right?
And then auction them off. I've seen it myself,
right?
So it is a very NHL thing, and to be honest with you, I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you why they do it. Maybe it's just because they feel as though this is the best method to advertise their wares. Just have the people have their players wear these three jerseys. Sometimes there's the third jersey. That's a very good question, and I'd love to know the answer to it, because I honestly don't know.
I think they have to move. I think they would move in that direction first,
mm-hmm.
like having, you know,
they have them on practice jerseys now.
Right. Yeah, but for game jerseys to start adopting some of these other, whether you want to call them innovations or gimmicks or whatever you want to call them, that other leagues have.
Yeah.
I think that step would happen before they move to advertising. And again, I think that the process for instituting advertising would include at least a 2 or 3 year get used to the idea period.
Right.
A public discussion, or maybe more of a monologue than a dialogue.
Yeah.
Like, well, get, you know, it's inevitable.
Yeah.
And I feel like every day that period doesn't start is another day where we can move that 3-year window.
Oh yeah.
And so,
oh, yeah.
So yeah, I think it's a ways out. And you know, none of the other leagues have really moved. You know, the NFL has shown no interest in it.
No.
Major League Baseball has shown no interest in it. There's still two NBA teams, the Thunder and the Pacers, still don't have it. I think when the NBA announced they were going to do this, most observers, myself included, thought every team was going to jump on it right away. And it's actually been a slow process. Only about half the teams did it, a little more than half, last season. Many of the ones who were bystanders the first year jumped on board during the offseason or right at the beginning of this season. But there are still those two. You know, it's still not universal yet in the NBA. I mean, we could still, I don't think it's likely, but the Pacers and Thunders can meet in the NBA Finals. I'm still holding out hope for an ad-free uniform matchup in the NBA Finals.
Indiana, it's tough because I'm sure the only people who wanted to advertise were like farm stands.
That's going to go over really well in Indiana.
They don't have a team. Hockey team. In the time we have remaining, we did a bit on ESPN about the new team in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a uniform design contest, which was robust and quite good.
I was really impressed. Like, you can watch Readers brought their A game for that contest.
Yes, and the stuff is on Flickr. You can find it off the website. It's really, really good. Your thoughts on what you'd like Seattle to look like? I mean, if you had your druthers. Because it seems from all the reports and the people I've talked to that red and black seem to be kind of the colors that they're looking at, which kind of sucks because there's so much of it in the league now.
Yeah, when I heard that, I thought it had to be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as you say, like, really? Another red and black team?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm hoping that turns out to be wrong, but if that's what we're stuck with, okay. And like, I wonder how the Devils and the Hurricanes feel about that.
And the Senators, a lot of teams.
Yeah.
Is there a color aesthetic that you'd like to see them?
I actually, as I mentioned earlier, I love green and gold in general. Like, I wish the whole world were green and gold. Green is my favorite color since I was a little boy.
Yeah.
And of course, green and gold are Sonics colors. You know, so there's a Seattle tradition there. And so that's what I would be hoping for. I don't think it's likely to happen, but that's would be my first choice.
And Sasquatch or Kraken? What's your preference?
You know, I gotta say, the whole Kraken thing, I am so into.
It's great, right?
You know, when we did the uniform contest, I got like 8 or 9 Kraken entries, and people had so much fun with that. And I want to have like Seattle fans and Red Wings fans basically competing to see who can throw larger tentacled.
Who is the king of the cephalopod?
Yeah, like, who can throw a bigger cephalopod onto the ice? Like, just think of the, like, those games are going to be epic.
Oh, it'd be incredible.
Just among the fans.
Yeah.
And we got all these, as I said, all these Kraken entries. And only one of them had an eyeball, which really added something. And so I hope they go that route, you know, because everyone had these like sea monsters and, you know, giant squid and blah, 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 you know, their version of a Kraken. But one of them had like a big eyeball in the midst of all the tentacles. And it added a lot of character.
Love it.
Frankly.
Love
so,
it.
I'm hoping for that.
Cool. Where can people find your stuff?
Well, if they can go to ESPN or just search on Paul Lucas, that's LUKAS, and ESPN, they'll find my ESPN work. Or they can go to uniwatch.com, that's uniwatch.com. And on Twitter, I'm at uniwatch.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
All right. Our thanks to Paul Lucas of UniWatch. Again, you can find him at uni-watch.com. Real good guy, real interesting conversation. And a dude I've been trying to track down for this very podcast for quite a while. He was going to come and be in studio with us at one point, but kind of fell through because, I don't know, New York traffic or subways or whatever. But it was good to talk to him. He's a good dude. All right, so enough with the grab-assing. And congratulations to everyone who skipped past the interview to get to the part of the show I ominously teased at the front, which I'm sure some of you probably did. The news ain't great. The news is that Dave Lozo is not doing Puck Soup anymore, which very much sucks, but it's his decision, and there's really no change in his mind about it, unfortunately, try as I might. I want to share as much with you about this as I can. Honestly, there's only a limited amount I can share, because I don't know too much about it. It's not anything personal between me and Dave. We're cool. We didn't have like a big falling out or anything, or a big fight or anything. It was genuinely a shock to the system that he didn't want to do the show anymore. But ultimately, it's kind of like a personal decision on his part. So let me set the table, because listen, you guys have invested so much of your time and energy and downloading and all that shit listening to this fucking show that I feel you are owed some level of explanation for why it's going to be different. On December 1st, the timeline is that me, him, and Lambert did the show. I think it was like the Thursday after Thanksgiving or something. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think that was around the time. A couple days later, December 1st, it's a Saturday morning. I'm sitting on the couch. I'm probably doing a crossword puzzle or playing Fortnite or whatever. I get a text message from Lozo to me and Katie, our producer, and he says, quote, "I have some not fun news. I have to take a break from the podcast for the rest of the season," which is kind of a long break. "I really thought it was something I could do additionally to my full-time job without any issues, but after 4 months of it, I now know that it's too much for me to handle. I want you to keep it going with someone else if that's possible, so no one but me is hurt financially. I know how burnt out I was in November, and there's no way I could keep this up through June. I'm really sorry, and hopefully doing it after the end of a month makes it easier to continue it with someone else besides me." And that's it, to be honest. Like, we went back and forth on some of the particulars about, you know, him leaving the show at the first of the month and how that means, what it means for, you know, advertising, Patreon, the whole bit. But then, you know, after that, asked him if he wanted to elaborate. He said no. If he wanted to talk about it, he declined. Asked him if he wanted to come and do one last episode to kind of, you know, tie a bow around this shit. And he said no. And henceforth, the awkward solo show that's happening right now in front of your ears. So I don't think I need to tell you how supremely bummed I am about this. You know, this was a partnership between two good friends. Built up the show in the last couple of years into something that we were both really proud of, survived the Nerdist debacle, such as it was, to go independent and really make a real go of it. I mean, it ain't easy to do a show without the direct backing of major media companies. I mean, you know, obviously I worked at Yahoo and then ESPN, and he's working for ESPN now. So it's not as if, you know, we're two guys, you know, working at the bank and then coming home and doing the show at night. I mean, it's obvious we had some reach, but at the same time, it's not as if, you know, a major media company is putting this out there for us. We were kind of putting it out by ourselves, and really proud of the audience we built and the influence we built and the listenership that we built doing that. So I don't take that for granted. I think it's something we were really proud of, and I think Dave was really proud of it too. And so, not to play junior pop psychologist here, but I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence he pulled the cord when he did. The last episode and the last bonus episode we did when Lambert was in town, you could tell his creative energy wasn't really there. I mean, if you listen to the bonus episode where we did the create new nicknames for all 31 teams thing, you know, I kind of come prepared with my shit and Dave's kind of freelancing it and freestyling it because, I mean, his creative energy is elsewhere. His creative energy is on this TV show that he's doing with Katie Nolan, and that's completely fine. So, you know, kudos to him for maybe identifying that level of burnout and that level of kind of going through the motions and not wanting that to be his legacy on this show. You know, if he's pulling back to better his career as a TV writer, that's great. Like, it's the thing he's always wanted to do. He's written scripts before. He's wanted to be in this kind of business before. So if the idea is that this dumb podcast is somehow affecting his ability to do that job well, I mean, that's the last thing I want. And obviously the last thing he and I both want is for one of us to kind of be into doing this show and the other one not. Because then the show blows. So it's not good. So maybe he's identified that, and you know, maybe the reason why he's not really into kind of explaining it further is just because he's bummed about the whole thing, which is completely understandable in his choice. Because he should take pride in what he did on the show and what we did together and building this show. But like he said, he wants us to keep it going. And, you know, the last 2 weeks have been kind of weird in trying to figure out if I wanted to keep it going. I mean, it's a very – hi, Sneakers. It's a very specific vibe. It's a really wonderful thing that he and I do. It's a rapport that's not easily replaced or even replaceable. I loved hanging out with him. I mean, that was, again, the bottom line with this podcast, and I think this is the reason why a lot of you guys dig it, is that it's just two people hanging out and talking hockey, you know, and or DC movies or Friends or all the other fucking nonsense that we would talk about. And so that's tough, man. And to be, you know, not only get knocked on my ass by the timing of this thing and the sudden nature of it, because God is honest truth, like, never breathed a word of it in the months leading up to this, not even uttering the word burnout at any point when it came to his job or this show. So getting the text was a real kind of rock your world moment for myself and for Katie. It's a bummer. Like I said, to not have him want to do the show anymore. You know, it took me a while to kind of figure out if I want to still do it. But I'll say this about the show. I think that, well, first of all, I love the show. And I love all of you. And I love the vibe and the approach and the ridiculous way that we've done things on the show. I think it's different than the roughly 40,000 hockey podcasts that I've started within the last 2 years. I think it speaks to a sliver of fandom that is different than you're going to find in other places. And I'm so happy that we were able to provide a place where you can congregate and be in a weird place that takes hockey seriously, but not seriously, and then throws in a bunch of other shit into the blender. So I needed some time to figure out what I wanted to do because I was blindsided by this. And, you know, ultimately, I still want to do it, not only because Dave, you know, said keep doing it, but because I love the show too much. And, you know, if you've followed me for years, you know that one of the greatest influences on my life was Mystery Science Theater 3000, and still is, by the way, if you've not seen the new season. What the fuck? Turn this dumb podcast off and fire up Mac and Me, because they do it. It's the best. I know in my heart that changes happen to shows, and you know, not only have, I mean, for God's sakes, I mean, change has happened before with me in podcasts where me and Merrick weren't doing the show anymore, and then Knucklehead shows up and I do the show with Lozo for a few years, and you know, there are still people that say, you know, I wish it was still you and Merrick doing the show, and then there are people that'll be like, you know, I wish it was still you and Lozo doing the show for the next person. But the point is that I want there to be a next person, and I want to still do the show, because if MST3K taught me anything, it's that I know in my heart that, you know, as long as you're true to the spirit of the thing and whatever your thing morphs into, it doesn't always mean that it gets worse. Different doesn't mean inferior. Different means different. And different can be good. Different can be the same. But different means different. And the bottom line is that if, you know, we're going to continue doing Puck Soup, the only thing I'm concerned with beyond your entertainment is that we stay true to the spirit of the show and not turn it into something that it's not. Because I don't want it to be like a Puck Soup in name only. A Pisino, if you will. So, next week there's going to be a new partner in crime. I got a couple options, both of them really, really good. And that's been the other part of this equation is, you know, once I said, okay, I want to do the show, then all of a sudden there's two brilliant people that, you know, I kind of want to do the show with. And it's just a matter of trying to figure out what the next evolution of the show should be and what the next evolution of the show would be in so far as, you know, keeping you guys happy and keeping me happy and staying true to the spirit of what we built here. So I don't want to fuck it up. I'm still trying to figure it out. I wish I had an answer for you right now. But that, of course, I mean, Gritty said no. By that I mean, obviously, I can't maintain an Ilya Bryzgalov impression for 6 hours a month, or else I would be co-host. Suffice it to say, it's someone that you'll know, someone you'll hopefully like, and is someone I'm comfortable can maintain the vibe that we've established here on Puck Soup. Patreon, it's going to continue on. You know, the person I've talked to both these people, and you know, have had extensive conversations about how they see the show, and there's no question that the subscription side is I think fun and different, and I think you guys get some value out of it, and it's something that I intend to continue and maybe even expand with a new show, Puck Soup 2.0. And yeah, I mean, I still got to figure it out. Your feedback, if you want to send it to me at Wyshynski on Twitter or post it to the Patreon or whatever, like, I'd greatly like to hear your feedback on the situation. Don't make your feedback be don't do the show anymore, because I'm going to do it. So, like, if your feedback is bury it under 60 meters of dirt because Lozo's burnt out and not doing it anymore, well, that's not constructive criticism. I'm looking for people that want to continue to listen to this dumb show and what they'd like the vibe to be, and what they're looking for the future of the show to look to sound like. So if you've got feedback like that, feel free to send it over. But in the end, last thing I want to say on this app is that I hope that you don't hold this decision against anybody, because it just is what it is, you know? And if you love the show, I hope that you give the next incarnation of it a chance and trust me enough to build on what we've already done here, and not, you know, fuck it up or not do, you know, present a version of it that is going through the motions or anything like that. I hope that you understand that, like, I love this show deeply and I love the audience deeply and I love that what we built deeply. And that, you know, that's the reason I'm doing this, is because it's too much fun not to. I love Dave for every single stupid tangent we've ever had on this show. And I love the friendship that we've gotten out of this show, which will continue beyond the show. You know, sitting in and trying to find ways to talk about hockey while also not talking about hockey are some of the best conversations that I've had in the last couple of years. And, you know, in the end, I think there's more to say. And I hope that you'll listen to it. So that's the shitty news that I'm sure many of you in the back of your heads were already formulating based on the fact that we do the show every week and there ain't one last week and this week was just me talking. It sucks. But again, it is what it is, and we forge forward. So that's the show. You can find me at Wyshynski. You know where I am on the Twitters. You find my writing at ESPN.com. Got some real fun stuff coming up, like big, long, reedy shit coming up. I did a bunch of podcasts in the last week, if you want to listen to other stuff in which I actually talk to other people. The Masked Man podcast on The Ringer, Dave Shoemaker invited me to come on and talk about wrestling. It was a super fun time. Neil Horowitz's Digital and Sports Media podcast is a podcast that I did about my career and such. He called me an NHL powerhouse, which is very nice of him to say, but by no means is it accurate. And I did a podcast called the Dr. Hockey Podcast, which is one of those podcasts that I just needed to do to see if it wasn't a Nathan Fielder prank, because it was two plastic surgeons who do a hockey podcast on, like, their own time. And it was a super great conversation. We had lots of fun. But I want to reiterate, it's two plastic surgeons that do a hockey podcast on their spare time. So do check that one out as well. All right, next week, Puck 2.0. You know, the doctor will regenerate into someone else. God willing, Jody Whittaker returns my calls and she's the new co-host, but probably not. That's the show. Thanks for listening. And above all else, thank you for supporting this nonsense. Talk to you next week. Bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to a different commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.